Most excellent. Throw them up. It's trade secrets. Throw them up. It's trade secrets now. The dubious crew's got beats for you. Oh, it's
trade secrets. Trade secrets. Trade secrets. These heads will finally peep this. Trade secrets. Trade secrets.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good morning. Wherever you are, it is Trade Secrets. I'm Adam Curry, coming to you from Flanders, Belgium. Hello, Q Dave.
Yeah, I'm here, but I have a little problem.
Well, you have a little problem. That's Dave Weiner, my good friend in Seattle, Washington. And this is Trade Secrets, everybody.
Oh, well, fuck that shit.
what are you talking about?
Try Plan B. Well, I thought I would put on my headset with the microphone, you know? The cool, like, broadcaster type thing.
You should. And, oh, there you go. Yeah, hello.
You know, it didn't work. Now I'm using like, well, I'm going to get carpal tunnel here using this thing, but yeah.
What are you using your regular microphone now?
Whoa, am I late?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, are you late for what?
Late for this thing, whatever it is.
Whatever mic you were using a second ago sounded better.
You mean this one?
Well, if you talk into it.
One, that's my laptop's mic. Let's try this one. Hold on.
Yeah, because the last thing I want is to tomorrow for you to say, you know, I really sounded like shit.
Yeah, like I was having my teeth operated on.
You have good teeth.
What?
You have good teeth, don't you?
I have okay teeth. I don't have great teeth. I don't really couldn't say I have good teeth.
You're hiding them with your mustache.
True.
Isn't that true that all guys with a mustache are hiding something?
Oh, totally. Hiding the fact that we don't like to shave.
Alrighty.
Oh, I can hear you fine. Okay.
Okay.
And, is that better?
Yeah, that's better. It's definitely better.
Yeah, I'm wearing a different headset now, and I won't get carpal tunnel.
It also looks very cute on you, I have to say.
Shit, I didn't know you cared.
Hey, Dave, I thought of a new way to start the show.
How's that?
By telling everyone that, welcome, this show is actually airing. This is not a show that was lost.
Oh, well, yeah, go ahead. Oh, I have to straighten you out on something. When you, like, talk about Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
And say, if you say something's really going to work and how that, like, you have to remember Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
So you sort of imply that Murphy's only around when you do things like that, but of course, no, that's not true, right? No matter what you do, Murphy's Law applies. It's famous last words is what you're tempting.
So
if people will actually hear this, you know, you just lost the whole recording.
Right. No, okay, but it's famous last words, but isn't it tempting Murphy?
Murphy doesn't need any temptation.
He's always there.
Yeah, you're like, you're the only proper attitude to take there is, I'm not worthy, you know?
Which right.
Reminds me of Dawn and Drew.
You know? You mean Wayne's World.
Yeah, well, same difference. Everybody else is tapping into that, you know? And I have not ever said that, I don't think publicly, but...
No, you told me, and then I started telling everybody.
Is that what it is? Oh...
And did you finally hear the WNYC interview?
Oh, I haven't had a chance to see that yet.
Because I'm glad, because I disclaimed it in the source code yesterday. As I was listening to the interview, I opened my mouth and you came out a couple times.
Oh, what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
My mother would like that.
Yeah, but there was no like little copyright line that said, "Ja, hon." Ja, ik ben iemand opnemen. Now I'm talking to Dave. We're doing Trade Secrets.
Oh, from that I think. Now he's really crazy.
I'm the play date, remember?
We're having a play date, remember?
I didn't know that.
Okay, yeah.
I thought you were talking to yourself.
No, I'm talking. But we're talking about you, don't worry. You and David, your lover boy. She's great.
So I flash. I want to tell you this little epiphany. When I saw yesterday... that, what was it, Northwest Public Radio?
Yeah.
This was straight out of the blue. I was happened to be reading audio.weblogs.com, just sort of poking around, you know, to see if there was anything new there. And I saw this feed from Northwest Public Radio, and I clicked on it and looked at it, and lo and behold, there's a podcast feed. You know, and I went to the site, and it's, you know, it's run by, it's coming out of Washington State University, Wazoo.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, well, shit, man, there's a lot going on in the Northwest with podcasting.
It wasn't that that hit me. What it was that I realized now that here you and I are, we're like two schmucks, you know, or at least that's how I think of it.
Oi.
And we decide to do something, and then 3 months, 2 months, or 3 months, or 4 years later, it doesn't matter how long it is, we just decided to do it, and now they're all doing it, you know? And it feels like the world works differently that now, you know, than the way I always thought. You know, we've succeeded at something, basically.
Hey, Mom, look, no hands.
Right, that's it. We've succeeded. That was the feeling. It was the feeling of, oh, my God, we actually succeeded at something. You know, because I'm used to trying really hard and fighting the good fight and being a good person and not cutting corners and not succeeding. You know, but this thing, you know, now I kind of wonder if they would let me do it again.
Well, that's interesting. And you should be congratulated, because all of this is because of RSS. And it was interesting, because I was talking to a friend of mine today, and he was trying to, you know, he's trying to figure out what, you know, what this is all about, you know, and was interested in podcasting, etc., not technical at all, and said, so is RSS really what makes, is that what powers podcasting, or am I also seeing that podcasting is shining a new light on RSS? And I thought, wow, that's a good observation.
It is. It's both. Both are true. And and that came up in, I did an IT Conversations interview yesterday with Doug Kay.
Yeah, is that out yet?
No, it'll be out on Monday. And that came up, and we talked all around that. It's sort of like, you know, podcasting is a conversation shifter, basically, for RSS, and we sort of figured that out after I had, you know, talked for quite a bit about how important it is to focus on users, that too much focus has been on, you know, the developers, and it's just not that interesting a story. Most people don't care about things that developers care about, and frankly, developers should only, in my opinion, should only care about the things that they care about insofar as it enables the users to do things.
Right.
And so much of the conversation about RSS, you know, if you were to, like, just sort of, like, you know, read every article about RSS, tell me what percentage of the articles was about the cool things people were doing with it versus the arguments that geeks have about it, you know?
Well, probably 1%.
Yeah, and that, now it's completely flipped.
It's flip-flopped, yeah.
And so when you look at that New York Times article that came out yesterday, you know, my ego takes a little bit of a hit, although, you know, it's not so bad because, you know, I even love everybody that is getting the light shown on them. I really, you know, this is nobody's, you know, it's a beautiful little community. Everybody kind of likes each other. Yeah, there's some jealousies here and there, of course, because we're human beings. But, you know, the technology got put in its proper perspective as enabling this nice thing, not as being it, not as being the thing itself. And this is sort of a disease that has been, ever since I came to Silicon Valley in, like, 79, you know, that was sort of the beginning of the rise of Apple. Apple had just gone public then, and they were, you know, this whole idea that, oh, wow, these guys must really know something because they can take this, you know, like, little computer that we don't understand and turn it into billions of dollars, right?
Yeah, that's a good trick.
Right, well, people really are in awe of that. They look at that. Well, you know, we need to understand more about this. So, and of course, the people that made the billions of dollars really didn't understand much more than the people who didn't make the billions.
They were just as amazed as the rest of us.
Right, but some of them were good at acting, not so amazed, like
Steve Jobs, right.
Steve Jobs put his fingertips together and took a deep breath and looked peaceful, and everybody said, well, there's a young man who gets something, and we want to get some of that.
You know what? I am in some, many ways a student of Steve Jobs. Not that I model myself after him, but I think he does a good show, man.
Totally. I mean, you know, I was at the Democratic National Convention this year, you know, blogging it, and that was one of my comments was these guys could learn a lot from Steve Jobs.
Yeah, you fucking A, absolutely.
There was no showmanship to it. It was no sort of pregnant. I mean, Steve Jobs is like a Ron Popeil, you know.
With the pocket fisherman.
Shameless. I mean, oh, I thought of something. I should tell you about this. And you go, yeah, sure, come on.
Right.
You forgive him for it because he's just so smarmy.
Although he went overboard, man. They're getting lazy over there with the whole U2 thing. It was like, that to me is not a slam dunk anymore. That was pathetic.
Yeah.
It really. Did you hear the comment Christina made, my daughter? She said, because I was watching U2 with her doing this iPod presentation, and Bono was going on and on about, you know, it was sickening. And she says, hey, Dad. I said, yeah. I said, did U2 ever not suck? She's 14, you know. I was like, right on.
Well, the answer is that there was a time when they did not suck, when they were doing the kind of shit we're doing now, you know.
Yeah. Although I have to say, I met Bono a long time ago, and I kind of thought he was a dick, really.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't usually hold that against people, you know?
No, that could have been just a... It was like one of those backstage interviews at a concert, you know, he may have just been like, I don't want to fucking deal with this. And the other guys were really nice, and they were like, oh, what's wrong with Bono?
Well, Well, I don't know. I think we could do a lot better than the iPod. I would like to see Apple trying to do that, but I'd also think that, you know, it's kind of disappointing in a way that we're not engaged in a conversation with Apple right now. I mean, you could have said until yesterday that it was not on the, you know, it was beneath their radar. How would they even see it, right?
Right.
You know, but an article, and maybe they didn't see it because, you know, yesterday was also, there were also articles in, actually it's today's paper.
Yeah, I was going to say, because this came after the iPod press conference.
Correct, and so there's all this press in there also about iPods, you know, news from Apple about iPods. You know, it's sometimes hard to forget, you know, we hear about things a little bit earlier, and but there was a sort of news cycle there, and we were sort of mixed in with it, but... And this is something I regret not talking about with Doug Kay, and I realized, you know, a couple hours after having done it, the one thing we didn't talk about is, okay, from a technologist's point of view, what could we do better in the iPod? What's missing in the iPod? And now, after, you know, these months, many, 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 many weeks...
We have a pretty good idea of some improvements.
Idea about where the failings of this, you know, little product is. I mean... I got the first clue. It's not just the iPod, it's the whole system.
Yeah.
My first clue, where was I? I think I was in, like, Kentucky or Tennessee or something, and I was recording a podcast in my car driving. And I set it up in the rest area, and I got going, and I set it up so that all I had to do was click the mouse to start recording, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just that act, I almost drove off the road, because the coordination required to do that, your eye has to be on the screen of the computer in order to actually pull that off.
Yeah, otherwise you can't even move the mouse right.
Right, or you move it a little too far and you click on the wrong thing. You have to be sure you're on the target when you click. So that part really sucks.
Imagine doing that in a helicopter, dude.
No, I wouldn't want to do that in a helicopter, dude.
tomorrow I'm doing one from an airplane, though. I'm going to do my source code from the airplane, but that's another story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want you doing it, you know, in the helicopter either, you know.
No, I'll have a safety pilot. Don't worry.
Okay. right. I mean, don't drive into like any, you know, power lines or anything like that. You know.
No, and that is the number one killer in helicopters.
Yeah. So then there's the other side of it, which is the playback, which is far more common. I mean, most podcasts, honestly, aren't recorded in cars, but why shouldn't that be easy? It should be. And you know, following the, you know, what was the magic of the Apple II, or the IBM PC or the Macintosh or any of these, you know, I think we kind of lost sight of it after a while. What the magic was is that they weren't just reading machines. They were also writing machines.
Right on.
You could develop software, and I think that you're following through on that, and maybe it's just an intuitive thing. Maybe there's no way of proving that it's right, but somehow it was wrong. It felt wrong. Like the VisiCalc guys, for example, they did their Apple II development on a mini computer, Iron, and I didn't. I wouldn't do that, and a lot of people wouldn't do that. We felt we should develop our software on the computer that we wanted people to use, because that way we would learn the limits of the machine better, and our software would more fit into the flow of a user who uses the computer.
Which is exactly what we're doing with creating podcasts, where we're all trying to figure out how to do it on the computer we're using.
But let's point out something here, that we're not really doing that, because the desktop computer is like the mini computer, and the iPod is the platform. Remember, we call this the iPod platform. So there's something really out of whack here, because we have a playback machine, and you can't create the content on the playback machine.
Right on. Okay, good point.
That's wrong. That almost certainly is a fatal flaw, okay? We can't see it right now because we don't have any alternative. Because there really is, you know, as bad as the user interface on the iPod is, and I think it's really bad. Even though it's really bad, it's the best out there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Really suck much worse. And you know, it's, you can't record on an iPod. I tried, you know, this is a I was listening to Daily Source Code one day driving I was driving from the east side of Seattle across Lake Washington, and then getting onto this big sort of freeway connector that gets you onto I-5, and it's kind of a hairy little, but I was listening, and you said something really funny, and I wanted to hear it again, okay? And
you have to hit the middle button, swivel the wheel to the left.
Adam, it's ridiculous. I ended up listening to the Daily Source Code from the beginning, and it was days old.
But of course it was just like yesterday's spaghetti, wasn't it?
It was really tasty.
No, but you know what? You're absolutely right. And I get such a kick out of the Trio podcast. Have you been following this guy?
Uh-uh.
Oh, he's on openpodcast.org. Now he has mobilepodcast.org where you can find his podcast feed. And he's figuring out, with all different kinds of software, how to actually create his entire podcast with music, with sound, on the Trio. And it's really cool to listen to him figure it all out. And now you see that's a cell phone, you know. Who's eating whose lunch?
Tell you what, yeah. No, that's right. Cell phones one of the ways to figure it out is where's the best place to play this stuff is to look to see what hardware you need to pull this off, right? And then the portable device that has all the hardware components is a pretty good chance that that's the one you want. And cell phones have a lot of it. I mean, you know, a lot more than the iPod does. You know,
in fact, I think that the new gen cell phones I'm seeing here, in particular, there's a Sony Ericsson that I think it still needs some software to make it easy for people, but you can already do a full-blown podcast. It's not, you know, it's not as simple, because you're not dealing with a mouse, you know, where you can just whip over to this and click that player and then have that player go. So we need some software developed, but I think the hardware bits are in it.
I don't mind if I do the I don't do very much post-production. In fact, I don't do any. I listen to it after it's been uploaded, but I don't mind doing that part on the laptop, especially if I can connect the device up to my laptop via a USB connection. And that's
the big one. That's the big clincher.
That's what the iPod does that the cell phones don't. Why is the iPod such an attractive way to do this? There are two reasons. One is, maybe three. First and foremost is the install base, okay? It's got a fucking huge install base, right?
6 million.
Okay, maybe it's not that big, but, you know.
No, I mean, just the iPod is 6 million.
And I think that, you know, but it's the install base relative to the Well, okay, let's leave it there. Say that it's the install base is big. It's also the USB connection.
Yeah.
And it's the lame user interface that's better than any other lame user interface. But you take that USB connection, and if the phone guys would get their shit together and realize that we need that kind of connection between our cell phones and our laptop computers, then something really could happen there. And the fact that we have a data format, we actually have two data formats.
Three.
What are the three? OPML, RSS, yeah. And what?
And MP3.
And MP3, of course, duh. Right. So MP3 is well established, but we still have to convince the cell phone people and, for that matter, the iPod people that these are formats that are worth supporting. Once they're supported, there's a lot more that we can do with that USB connection.
Well, I think the cell phone people, I don't know how good they are at paying attention and listening. I know that they need this because that competition is unfucking believable. Nokia, they freaked out about a year ago and they said, Jesus, we've just lost all our market share. Now they're flooding in with any kind of cell phone they can come up with. And you've got, Sony Ericsson and also Pocket PC coming around the corner. I mean, this is very, very competitive.
Well, let's hope they read the New York Times at Nokia.
Yeah.
And let's hope they get the idea that, we've got a guy with great hair and we've also got some great technology behind it, It has to be, we've talked about this, you and I. I'm saying that in all seriousness because we understand how people's minds work, right?
Yeah. I wasn't laughing. I know what you mean.
I was appreciating the fact that you were. I mean, that they need to get that it's not simply a, we seem to have many, if not all, of the pieces coming together here and a new application. And I think a cell phone provider that says, okay, we're actually going to take a side here and we're going to say, okay, we believe this is a good application for our cell phone and then do something to help promote it is going to... But by doing something, I mean, put an interface on the damn thing so that it's very easy to write software on the desktop that not just moves raw bits of data onto the machine, but move structured information that, this whole idea that you run their software on your laptop,
yeah,
to control, that's just simply not going to fly, And iPodder, if it proves anything, it proves that even a cobbled together thing is vastly superior to whatever locked trunk one of these guys is going to come up with.
So I hope Ed Pendengo is listening. Remember him?
I think so. It's kind of like Firesign Theater for you.
No, Ed. You met Ed in Amsterdam at we had a blogger dinner, and he was the guy developing applications for cell phones.
Did he sit right across from me at the dinner?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that was kind of a okay, I remember. A blonde-haired guy.
Well, he's Dutch, of course. He's blonde.
They're kind of beefy and.
Yeah, had his finger in the dike.
What kind of Dutch name is Pentago? That sounds like Hispanic or something.
No, that's not his real name. That's his weblog, Pentdengo, I think. Pentdengo.
Got a Dutch in there too.
Do you know that Hans Brinker, the Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, is not a true story? That was made up by American tourists.
Well, blow me away. I mean.
All right. Just wanted to give you a little bit of trivia, everybody.
Yeah, and then there's Pete. How do you pronounce Pete?
Prodol.
Prodol. Yeah.
Prodol. Yeah. Great. He's funny. Did you hear Slash Dot audio comments?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Well, I mean, the thing about his blog, his podcasts are that they're so
short and they're short.
That's what I mean. You just click on them and you laugh and you move on to the next one. I think, by the way, that is the answer. You did a. Where, sort of the big question was, well, and this is, I get asked this all the time, is like, okay, if I listen to Adam Curry for an hour, and I listen to you for an hour, and I listen to, any number of, I listen to Don and Drew for an hour, I listen to Dave Slush.
I have no time left for sex.
Right, or to eat, or to work, or whatever. And the answer is that, first of all, you know, the length of your podcast is sort of telling people how, you know, how big you think your dick is. You
know? And I've shrunk mine by about 20 minutes recently.
You go up to an hour, and that's, but, you know, and that's fine, you know, because, you know, you strike a balance, because people who just don't have the time to commit won't become part of your little world, or it could be a big world, of course. But if you, like, are, you know, Pete Prudhoe, all right,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to, you're not asking for a lot, so you could, like, go up into the millions, maybe. And and you were talking about this a long time ago, is that, you know, chaining these things together, like the tap dancing.
Oh, the tap dance podcast news?
Oh, my God.
I love that.
Wonderful. I mean...
God, did you hear the latest one? There's a new one out.
But I want to point to that on Scripting News. I want everybody to see that, you know, which does say also that it would be really nice if we could get URLs with every daily source code. You know, like the Geek News Central is doing that.
Yes, you're right. Well, what I'm working on now is, actually, I store all my rundown, my lineup of stuff that I'm going to talk about, I store that in on a Manila site, and I just want to add a couple bits so that it's a lot of work, you know, so I want to automate it for, I know what I want. I want to automate it so that I don't get stuck in this rut of doing it anyway and not getting around to writing the scripts to make it work.
The way to do it is we raise some money and we hire somebody, or we hire a production team, and that's just done for you. Like, you don't have to do anything.
Oh, that would be so nice.
That's what we got to do.
Oh, man.
Time to start.
Can we raise some money for blowjobs? I'm sorry, I'm in my Dawn and Drew mode.
Well, you don't have to pay for those, I don't think.
Hold on, what was I going to play? Oh, it was...
Hey, don't go into the song. I actually decided something during one of the little stretches, and I want to tell everybody about the decision. We need to have a developers conference for this stuff. You know, we're going to do the users conference, the first one, on November 6th. But I think we need to put together something where, you know, we can sit in a room and invite the, you know, some of the manufacturers to come sit down with us, and let's say, okay, here are some formats that, you know, we can all support, and we can, like, get into this business within a year, within 6 months or a year.
And I think there's a real business there for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, we can do it. We just need, you know, well, you know, it's not actually, we don't really need anything, but we wouldn't it be nice to have not to drive off the road when you're doing a podcast, and to have a big red button on your iPod that starts the recording right now, and when you get home you connect it up and the sync not just goes out for the things that you bought from Apple, but also the things that you get gathered when you were out in the world also come back and go up onto the internet, so everybody else can have them too.
Right.
You know, like we're two-way human beings are two-way devices. You know, we're not just one way, and that's what podcasting, of course, is all about. I mean, you know, we have, you know, I'm starved for Wayne's World, but I'm no longer starved. Don and Drew provide it for me whenever I want it now, and it's got the advantage. They're real people, whereas Wayne's World were really sort of like, they seemed really real, right?
But, yeah, and you can meet Don and Drew at BloggerCon, everybody. They'll be there all week.
Yeah, no shit.
The Don and Drew Roadshow.
Thinking of giving them an iPod, you know, in sort of a ceremonial way. Because now they're saying it, in the Philly Inquirer article.
They're saying that they traded the trip to BloggerCon instead of buying an iPod?
That's not what they said. They have a tip jar, and they said, if we get enough money, maybe we'll actually be able to afford an iPod. You know, of course, the reporters eat that stuff.
Yeah, they love that. Yeah. And you know what? These kids are smart. They know what they're doing.
I think they do.
They know exactly what they're doing. Well, maybe not exactly, but I'm very impressed. You know, I've been in media for half my life, and, you know, there's like, they're natural. They're boom. They get it. And you know, the way they slide in and out of interviews, and it's really good.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
They'll be saying that bit about wishing they had the money to buy an iPod when they're worth $10 million.
Yeah.
That'll be part of their shtick, right?
And yeah.
That's the problem. thing we really enjoy about this stuff is, I mean, I do, I can't speak for anyone else, is that, you hear the farts and the belches and the all the flaws come through, right?
The human stuff?
The human stuff, right? But what happens when Don and Drew turn into Wayne's World, if that should happen? Then what? You know, is it really going to be still the same, is it going to have the same charm?
Well,
or did we create in one, mass media for another,
Yeah, you know what?
You don't know.
I don't know. I really don't know.
We'll find out.
Maybe hey, dude. So when I come to America, we're going to have a new president. Or we'll have, we'll have a president that, let me be positive. We'll have a new president.
From your lips to, they're both starting, it's coming down so close to the wire now that the commercials are starting to shift gear, and they're talking about that private moment when you're in the voting booth and you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I was voting.
I got my card yesterday. It was so exciting. I mean, a little postcard from the state, Kings County, State of Washington, United States of America. Dear Mr. Weiner, you get to vote, and here's where you go. And,
cool.
Yeah, and I said, wow, it worked. I get actually, my plan was that I would vote and my vote would count. And Washington for a while looked like it was, a solid blue. Well, when I chose, Washington was a battleground state, and then it turned into solid blue. And basically, I thought, oh shit, I went from one solid blue state to another, and what did I accomplish? Well, now it's a light blue, borderline white, light blue. My vote will count, and it's really exciting. And I'm voting for Kerry. I will vote for Kerry, even if at the last minute, while I'm in the voting booth, I think maybe I should vote for Bush. I'm still going to vote for Kerry.
Well, it wasn't as easy as I thought it could be to vote by proxy, because I've already voted.
What's a proxy?
Well, that's what they call it, voting by proxy.
Really?
Yeah, and so you have to you can finally find the actual form in PDF that you download and then print. And then you have to fax it and call them, unless you want to send it by mail. But it's very unsophisticated.
Really?
Yeah. It's not very apparent and easy, but, is it ever? It's certainly not as easy as walking into a voting booth.
Uh-huh.
I voted for John Kerry.
Oh, no kidding, really.
And I think that my vote's going to be important this year because that's the shit they pulled last time, right? Is, it's all the overseas votes.
Well, where did you vote? What state?
New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. New Jersey is New Jersey's not a battleground state. It doesn't show up all the time, but New Jersey is contested. They your vote counts.
But I know that all my peeps from Jersey hometown, they're going to put the new boy in.
Good. Well, let's hope we, it's going to be,
especially all my Italian friends in New Jersey. They're not stupid.
No, they're not.
They don't want a gangster bigger than them in the White House.
No.
We want our boys running the country on the streets, not some dickhead in the White House.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's the way I see it.
So what do you think? Do you think that if Bush is reelected, the Netherlands will invade the United States? I don't hope.
The Netherlands are big fucking pussies.
Really? What about France? What about Russia? What about China? I mean, are they going to come, reclaim our democracy?
No, not at all. No.
Nice to have democracy here in the USA. I mean...
No, but everyone's all fucked up over here. They got their own problems. They blew up the European Commission just on the eve of them installing the commission because one of the Italian candidates, hates gays, thinks women are lame and should be in the kitchen. All these little minor details.
Yeah.
So they got all their own problems over here. I've been asked by almost every single television show and some really good news programs, respected news programs, to be on the show during the elections.
Oh, yeah?
And I told every single one of them, I said, look, that means we're going to start around midnight. And if you think that we're going to have a president by morning, you're fucking crazy. It could be 3 days. I'm not going to sit around wait for that.
Well, I mean, you're tempting fate there. I mean, it.
I believe. But I believe the Democrats are going to be ready.
Yeah, well, it could be the Democrats in a landslide. I mean, I've seen it said in places that, you know, when people get into the voting booth, and even Republicans are going to say, well, you know, I can't like stand behind this guy. I feel that way. I mean, you know, I wrote about this on Scripting News that Dennis Miller, the comedian, apparently has become a Republican, which I...
Yeah, it was a couple days ago I saw you write about that.
Yeah, and he said that if Kerry gets elected, he'll get behind him and support him because he's president of the United States. And I, you know, pointed out that we all did that with Bush after we were attacked. And I go back and read the things that I wrote 3 years ago on Scripting News, and it makes me want to puke.
Yeah, you were like, yeah, I stand behind my president.
And I have to do that. You know, the country was attacked. And, you know, what my attitude on that is, whatever my personal feelings are about the guy, he is the president. And you try to create a bubble around him for him to rise into the role, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we really needed a leader. And it wasn't optional. He was the guy, and there wasn't going to be anybody else. And so if he didn't rise into it, I felt we were pretty fucked. So, and that's the thing that I think that's great about America. It's sort of our business attitude about things is that, you know, when you know push comes to shove, it's like we don't care that much about our feelings. We care about the result.
And the cover of Time magazine, which I just saw today, at least the European Time magazine, was a picture of, you know, two suburban homes side by side. And you know, one kind of soft focus in the foreground, one a little bit sharper in the background, and you saw the Bush Cheney sign in yard one, and Kerry Edwards sign in the yard right next door, and you know this whole cover article is they're calling the uncivil war, which will start on November 3rd.
Well, it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, that's what I thought that Miller was saying that was so incredibly constructive was that it's, you know, I'm in that because of what he said, I'm kind of glad that he's a Republican because a Democrat, you know, the problem is that I don't see myself being able to make the same claim. Okay? I mean, it's I gave Bush every opportunity to lead this country and I feel I did my part, and I feel like he betrayed us. I feel he looked at that as an opportunity to further humiliate everybody, you know, but his cronies, but his buddies. They just used that support to enrich themselves at just an incredibly selfish thing to do, you know. And I just don't want to – I don't see myself – I think it would be dishonest for me to say I support that. Even at this point, even if the country was attacked. And so I really think that the only viable answer here is to elect Kerry. Because what I said to counterbalance Miller's offer was, is that if Kerry should get elected, I'm willing to put his feet to the fire day one, okay?
Yeah.
I will not cut him 1 minute's worth of slack, you know, that he's got to be straightforward and honest. And frankly, I don't understand why Kerry hasn't put up something like, in escrow, you know? Like, how about his wife's fortune? Let's put her fortune on the line here. If he's ever caught lying to the... if he's elected president and he's caught lying, she loses every dollar she's got. You know?
Yeah, well, but that's... I understand what you're saying, but that's not a good way to do it. That's her money. That's not his money.
All right. So all of his money and he has...
No. We cut off a testicle.
Okay.
Can you relate?
That's more humane than taking away all her money.
Yeah, I think that's fucked up. You can't, you know, I think a testicle is worth several hundred million dollars.
The fact that he's a prostate cancer survivor.
Really?
Doesn't have any testicles.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, he had prostate cancer. Yeah, recently.
Do you think he can still get it up? That's fucked up, man. That's what I liked about Clinton. I like a president that's fucking.
At least we knew that he could do that.
Yeah, I like that. You know, and you know what? I think that's. I want to know that, and I think the people at large in the country, because everyone's doing it.
Fucking?
Yes.
Fish. You know, if everybody's.
And by, let me just make an observation right here, and I'm glad that we can get around to sex because I was getting bored of politics. America is, you know, because we sit over here, and of course we sit over here and laugh at the Janet Jackson nipple gates and all, you know, and Howard Stern having to move off of broadcast radio and how incredibly prudish the American media is and the political correctness of what you can and can't say and the seven dirty words. And we laugh at the hypocrisy of this because, in my opinion and the opinion of my wife, Americans are in general the most horny motherfuckers on the planet Earth. Everyone's blowing everybody everywhere, and the best porn is made in the good old U.S. of A.
All USA, all the way.
All the way, and you know, and you know, and I have to say, I'm actually proud of that. I think it's awesome. Not all of it. It's a lot of bullshit, but then to see how, you know, it's just the hypocrisy is whacked.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! And it sounds like when I said whacked, Dave, hold on. Now see, this is good because now we had a crash. Skype crashed actually, but the recording continues. Now of course Dave is sitting there going, "Oh fuck, man, we lost the show," and so I get to surprise him for once. Hello.
Yeah.
We didn't lose the show. We're still recording.
Are you sure?
Yeah, 100%, oh boy.
All right, so let's just keep going, because...
Right in the middle of porn.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take it back to...
Politics? Okay.
Well, no, related.
Okay.
Jerry Falwell, I saw Jerry Falwell on TV.
Yeah.
That's not related to sex, okay?
Didn't he have a scandal? Didn't he have a sex scandal?
Did he? Honestly, I don't know. But he said they had done a survey, and the interviewer agreed with him that 40% of the American population is born-again evangelical Christians. In other words, when you do a survey and you ask, are you a born-again evangelical Christian, 40% say yes. And, of course, he saw this as being a very good trend. It meant that pretty soon – and you know what? That's confirmation. That's why what you're really observing there about the U.S. being so uptight, you can't make a blanket statement about that because, you know, there are a lot of Americans who feel the same way you do.
No, I said media. I didn't say Americans. I said American media.
Okay.
And by the way, may I quote from the National Enquirer? A homosexual scandal is rocking Reverend Jerry Falwell's arch-conservative Liberty University, where rumors are rampant that male students engaged in gay sex with a campus pastor.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, we know that people, you know, well, we know that. But, and you're right, it is hypocrisy. But what I'm adding to it is that it's reality here. And it's, you know, it's like the trip I took to Europe earlier this year, where the thing I heard consistently from people is, well, you know, we love the American people, but we hate the American government
Right, you know, yeah, you hear that a lot.
We hate the American media or whatever. And, you know, what I kept saying to them is that, well, you don't understand, because the reason why the American media is that way and the American government is that way is that the American people are that way. They really are. And, you know, if you go to southern Illinois or to southern New Mexico or to Orange County in California or rural Washington State or, you know, New Hampshire.
Oh, man, why is Skype crashing? This is not right. This is just not very nice. And this hasn't happened before. I do want to hear what Dave has to say here, so let's... find out. I'll call him this time. Maybe that helps.
Okay, we're going to be doing this regularly.
I don't know. Skype is crashing for some reason. I have no idea why. But you were saying New Hampshire. And I understand what you're saying, and you're right. The majority of Americans
find out. We'll find out. This is a referendum on whether or not the United States still has a heart. That's what I see this as, this election as.
Okay, can I make another blanket statement?
Sure.
Okay. Another thing, all Europeans, it's become a little bit less over the years, but certainly 20 or 30 years ago, Americans were perceived to be completely insincere people. And what they mean by that, and here's the parody you'll hear of an American in Europe, a European parodying an American. Oh, how interesting. Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I have a friend over there, and we can stay at his house. Okay? And they find this completely alien, and they think that Americans are full of shit and are not interested and don't think it's wonderful and are putting them on. And I have, for years, said, that is the truth. Americans are like that. And in general, we love our neighbors. I can't say that for Europe. People are killing each other over here. They're beating each other up, and they're jealous, and they hate each other's fucking guts, and no one's working together. Look at the European Union. The European government is exactly the representation of Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know why I'm going to fucking England. Christina, we should go back to America. And she goes, okay. Why? Why do you want to go back to America? Why?
TV.
TV. Hot topic.
Hot topic.
And cool high school. Okay.
I would support you coming to the United States. That would make everything a lot easier. We could do trade secrets with 3-hour time difference, and maybe even a no hour time difference at some point.
Well, look, I'm already going to be moving 1 hour closer. Okay.
No, I mean London is easy, and London is sort of turning into England is sort of turning into a hub.
It is.
You know? It's easy to get, and you know, in all likelihood, my guess is I'll end up on the East Coast probably. You know?
You're an East Coast boy. You're not a West Coaster.
I know. You got to be careful about that, though, because, I tend to get really influenced by what people say. So I'm going to make my own decision on that. But it seems that way. And I have so many reasons. I'm going to be in New York in November, December, and now in January. There's another Harvard's having a conference. This is going to be really interesting, by the way. Harvard's having a joint conference on blogging between Berkman Center, which is where I was at,
yep.
and Shorenstein, which is sort of the counterpart of Berkman, but in the School of Government. And Shorenstein is for journalists who go on fellowships, mm-hmm. basically. Now they have faculty and they have classes too. But the interesting thing about Shorenstein is the director there is a guy named Alex Jones. And if you look up Alex Jones, if you Google him, you'll see a lot. He wrote an editorial in the LA Times during the dean candidacy, and basically said, and it was the most horribly inaccurate. It was lies.
Infowars.com? Was that Alex Jones?
Anything but Alex Jones. That's gonna be. And the thing about it is, I had lunch with Alex Jones and with Rebecca McKinnon. She introduced me to him. She was a fellow at Shorenstein. She's now a fellow at Berkman. She'll also be at BloggerCon. And, you know, it was an adversarial conversation, but it was a very good adversarial conversation. You know, if we had tape recorded it, you would have heard all of the issues coming out on both sides. You know?
Some writings by Alex Jones covering ethnic conflicts, reflecting on a different era in political journalism, The Vanishing Voter, covering science and technology, and bloggers are the sizzle, not the steak.
Yeah, that was it. And he went further. There was more after that, too. There was a point where I just couldn't believe it was the same person, you know, because this is a Pulitzer Prize-winning former New York Times reporter who has risen all the way to the top in academia and has written these very scholarly books that are very highly regarded. And when it comes time to debate whether blogging is making a contribution to journalism, he resorts to lies. And go, whoa, what is going on here? Is this guy scared or what? You know?
Really?
And, yeah, totally. And so, you know, they invited me to the conference to their credit. They know damn well that I'm going to stand up and argue with Alex. And, you know.
Can we send Mark Cantor, too, just to really freak him out?
let's not do that.
Hi. Hi, Alex.
Mark is actually starting to make some sense now. You know, people are giving him shit about all this stuff about, you know, he says people should be blogging, that you should pay people to blog about your product, right? And so the knee-jerk reaction is, well, you know, that will create conflicts of interest, et cetera, et cetera. The answer is it doesn't necessarily create a conflict of interest if you disclose it.
No.
If you tell people you're getting the money, you have not created a conflict of interest. And in fact, if you tell people I can write about anything I want to, and you actually do, there's no reason why the company shouldn't pay you to write about it. The company deserves a lot of credit if they actually can pull that off.
Well, just like all of us are complaining about technology companies and entertainment and content companies not having their shit together and not going with the times, we need some adjusting too.
Totally. You know, it's sort of like, ask yourself the question, okay? You're now a developer, Adam. You know, I know you joke about it, but you actually are a developer, whether you want to acknowledge it or not.
Do I get a ribbon?
No, you get a question. Okay.
Okay.
Let's say Apple called you up and said, you know, we really think it's great that you're writing the software for our platform. We'd just like to give you some money. And say, well, what would I get the money for? Say, no, we just want to give you some money. And you keep, you know, so this is kind of what, now if you really get it. Now,
I'm waiting for my question. Is this a part of the question?
I guess the question is, has this ever occurred to you? Because that I should shut up and let you answer the question, but I should also explain it. That developers always seem to get to this point where you say they ought to just give me money for doing what I'm doing, you know, because I'm helping them build a platform here. And so I guess that's the question.
So the question is, do I think I should get money from Apple for helping them build their platform?
I don't know. No, that's a stupid question. Of course, if
can I have the ribbon after all? The question honor sucks.
Yeah, the question sucks. It's true.
Well, then make a point, because I know you want to make a point.
It's sometimes. You know, okay, what's the alternative? So let's say a company wants to take a ride on the clue train, right? They read Doc Searle's, you know, David Weinberger, Doc Searle's, Chris Locke, David Levine's book, okay?
Yeah.
Clue Train, which is a great book, and you know, it's approaching an idea from 50 different angles. You could have done it in one chapter, but they did it in 20 chapters.
Cluetrain.org.
Yeah, and you know, the Cluetrain Manifesto basically
says, excuse me.
It's like the Bush guys say, well, we're not reality-based. You know, the Cluetrain says, get reality-based, you know? And in other words, when your customers call you up and say your product sucks, you know, the Cluetrain says, you don't fight them on that. You don't disagree with them on that. You say, okay, our product does suck. Let's figure out what we can do to make it better or to make your experience with it better, and we'll try to fix it, you know, later. And, you know, it's basically, you know, just don't play the old message game. Don't, you know, treat your customers like individuals, and, you know, that's the new way to do business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a Cluetrain devotee company, and you decide that you want to make an investment in transforming yourself to being, you know, clued in. So what do you use the money for? Do you, like, say to your employees, oh, here, go write a blog, right? We're not going to tell you what to write. You can write whatever you want, you know, but go ahead and do this, and we won't interfere. Most employees wouldn't know what to do, and they'd be scared to do it because they don't want to lose their job, right?
Right.
You put the CEO up there and say, you know, here, I'll write a blog, and I'll tell you what I think or how I feel about all these things. Again, the CEO, it's unfair to ask them to do that. They've had a whole life of training that says...
Don't do that, yeah. Control the flow.
Right. And, you know, you could tell them to do it, or he could, or she could decide to do it, but, you know, it's not going to ring true. And the best way is, I think, what Mark is saying is, you know, go find some people who are interested in your product, maybe even love your product, and support them, but don't tell them what to say. Just say all you have to do, all we want you to do, never mind what you have to do, what we want you to do is to, you know, look at our products, use them, and write about them. And it shouldn't be any trick to find people to do that because, you know, go find people who already use your products. And, you know,
Okay. Yeah. I'd take the money.
Yeah. Of course you would.
Yeah, I'd say thank you, and can I make you some more?
Right.
Of course I would, and I think anybody else would. I think that's right. But yep. Unfortunately, well, maybe we should tell people, don't wait around for that call from Apple.
Yeah, it probably ain't coming.
Yeah, it is not. You know, and I had a vision, man, for just like a second. I was just thinking, here's Steve Jobs. He's going to be on stage. He's going to be introducing his new iPod. And if he only just said podcasting just once, you know, just it slipped out. You know, like, that's why I just wanted to hear him say, I hear people out there on the internet talking about podcasting.
Not that one. That was clever.
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, but it was not to be.
Of course, what would it cost him to do that? I mean,
he doesn't know about it.
No.
No.
Right.
I mean, I think I can disclose this now that I heard several weeks ago when podcasting was just starting, someone sent me an email who I believe was probably telling the truth, said, you know, I spoke to the guy who was credited most for creating the iPod, and I was talking to him, and then the guy said, what is this podcasting you speak of? What is this? And so he didn't know, and he was going to look into it, but they don't know. When I heard Steve Jobs talk, he was only talking about music. He was only, what you just said, Dave, only one way. One way only. One way street.
Yeah, it pissed me off when he said that there was no video content, because one of the, you know...
Well, it's a lie! He owns huge fucking volumes of video content.
Right, but going back to the two-way thing, it's like, I've got this, you know, Brownie camera, you know, the Nikon Coolpix, which is like point and shoot, you know, it has a dialing. So you turn the dial to the little movie camera.
Yeah, and you shoot a movie.
Press the button down, and you let it up, and guess what ends up on your hard drive? A .mov file, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bigger, or it's a lot bigger than, you know, a picture, but it's not that much bigger than a podcast is, you know? We've already got the distribution system in place for that. Every, you know, so what he said was ignorant. It was simply not true, you know? It was, that's why it irritated me. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if they got on top of this thing, and then, you know, well... You know, they didn't get on top of it, Adam, for a couple of reasons. One is, well, three, they didn't know about it, so that sort of is a deal stopper. But
yeah.
Second, they don't have a product that really works with it. And third, and most important, is they don't have a way to profit from it directly. So,
right, I know, but you know, they always have every single fucking Yahoo on stage to demo their fucking software, and I just want to see, you know, Ray or August or Andrew or one of our guys be up there and say, you know, with fucked up hair and like half stone, and say, dude, got this iPodder. I mean, that's all I want from the company that I have spent tens of thousands of dollars on beta testing their product.
I got a clue for you, though. That and $1.50 gets you on the New York City subway.
Yeah, right on.
I've been there, and
it gives you nothing?
Nothing at all. I mean, basically, you know, you get a few people going, oh, did hell freeze over too?
But yeah, right.
You know, worth it. I mean, they actually literally said that. It's like, wow, I can't believe they let you up there, right?
That's nice.
It doesn't mean it's nice, and the buzz lasts for about a negative 2 seconds, and
right.
After that's, so, well, where are the sales? And you don't ever see it. They set it up so that all the sales go to them. It wasn't always that way, okay? I mean, there were times when, and I talk about this quite a bit of length in the Doug Kay thing that I did yesterday, but there were 2 years, in my experience, when we really were able to do deals with Apple regularly, and they were win-win deals. And but it was only 2 years out of, whatever, 20 years the Mac has existed now. So, you know, we got to create our own platform. That's the lesson of the Internet. That's
yeah.
The reason why I came back into software in 94. I had, like, quit because the big companies, you know, just simply weren't going to create or let the little companies do anything, you know. I told the story, like, to Robert Scoble the other day, because he and I have been sort of, like, arguing in a friendly way about, you know, our relative respective ignorances, you know. And
yeah.
My thing about Microsoft, and Microsoft, of course, is quite a bit bigger than Apple, you know, is that that they're like this big sulking teenage giant, you know. It's like, and you know, they moved into this neighborhood, moved right next door to this lovely trout salmon stream, and they ate all the fish in the stream, and the cop comes along and says, that's illegal. Let me slap your wrist. And so the cop slaps the wrist. And then a year later, they're starving, and they blame the cop for it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, the problem is that you were really dependent on that stream because you guys never, ever come up with a new idea. All you do is chase the headlights, and now you don't have any headlights to chase. So don't complain to me. Now you have to start investing in headlights again now. And, you know, you can't do that within a large company like Microsoft. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't work. You're right. I mean, you have a company with 500 people, let alone 50,000. It doesn't work that way.
Companies, Adam. Companies don't create software.
No, they don't.
We have a platform without a platform vendor, and that is the charm of the internet. That's why the internet is a charming platform. That's why there's room for you and me and Don and Drew and Dave Slusher and the iPodder X guys. You know, that's why we can do something. The minute we start grabbing for attention from the big corporations,
that's death.
Well, yeah, and you know, we are already kind of doing it, you know. But yeah, we have to watch out for, like, really, really defining success in those terms. It won't work for us. They won't let us have any money. So we kind of have to create, the way I look at it is we have to create our own sort of uplift, our own updraft, and then we have to conspicuously play by a different set of rules, which says that it's okay to acknowledge somebody who is a competitor, okay? It's okay to say, hey, you know, these guys really made a contribution here and, you know, send some flow in their direction. It's okay to do that. You're not going to melt. You're not going to fall apart. Just like Microsoft wouldn't have fallen apart had they let Netscape exist.
Right.
We now can see that really clearly. And you have to apply that. You have to say, okay, we need some discipline here, you know, and to say, okay, we don't have to be everything, you know.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
So, like philosophy, eventually, you know, the Boston Red Sox had philosophy, right?
How about them fucking Red Sox, dude?
It took 80-something years for the philosophy to pay off.
Yeah, it was 1918, right? 1918 was the last time? The only time?
Not the only time. No, up until then, they were the team that had won the World Series the most.
I was at my mom's this morning. I had to take her to the hospital, and she had, like her Ted Williams beaming smile.
Yeah?
Yeah, I told you he's a big Red Sox fan.
Everybody's a Red Sox fan today, except for the Yankees. And even they would be Red Sox fans, but we won't let them. They have to sit in the corner and take their lumps right now, and we get to shake our fingers at them and go, bad Yankees, bad Yankees.
Hey, Dave, we're an hour and 2 minutes into this. So let's hit on a couple things. Because otherwise, you know, if we go too long, people will think our dicks are really big and we might disappoint them.
Yeah, totally.
Outage on iPodder.org?
Yeah, that was a DNS problem. I don't know exactly how it happened or whatever, but last night I couldn't get through to iPodder.org. At first I thought the server was down. I went to look at the server. The server was all right. Then I thought basically it was something had happened with the DNS.
The DNS that I set up, of course. Always go for the weak brother in the technology chain.
No, just I went to the server.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, and then I thought, well, no, a DNS problem. And, you know, I didn't realize that it was a local one. Then I went to go look at the server log and noticed that iPodder.org is getting hit. So I know that some people it's working for. And then this morning, I'm able to get through again. So
yeah, because I saw your email, and it was pretty late for me because I was still up, and I checked it, and I was like, that's got to be something local to you. Because I was unlike, I mean, I can get to iPodder.org. I unfortunately cannot get to the George W. Bush website.
You know what that's about. We figured this one out.
Oh, you did?
Well, Netcraft posted a theory, and that got me thinking, okay? They said, well, basically, you know, the best way to get a book popularized is to have it banned, you know? And so there are all these Europeans trying to get through to the site now, and there are ways to do it. And of course, they never would have been doing it otherwise. But I thought, well, why should they care about Europeans? And the answer is they don't. What they care about is Americans. And what they're going to do is hope to create a little bit of buzz around this, maybe a lot of buzz, and then Bush is going to say in some campaign speech, we take security seriously, and we have put up, erected these barriers to keep the terrorists out of our country, and we not only do it at the ports and at the airports and, you know, the railroad stations, but we do it on the internet. And, you know, the poor schmucks.
You really think that's their strategy?
I think they want an uproar about this. They want people, you know, it's one of these crazy, stupid things where it looks like they're being really clueless. So all the Democrats are going to get up in arms and say, look at how clueless they are, neener, 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 you know. And then they're going to have the last laugh because most people are too confused to even know what the fuck any of this is about.
Yeah, but you know, that's not a very good strategy for foreign policy.
Now nobody cares about foreign policy. They care about...
The foreigners do.
He elected. Well, tell me... Yeah, all right. So that and $1.50 gets you on the subway, too?
No. Be careful what you say. We have a lot of influence over here. You know that the Netherlands, which is a country smaller than Rhode Island, with 17 million people living on it, is the number two exporter to the United States. It's like $30 billion that we export. There's a lot of fucking power here.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys used to own New York.
Yeah, we sold it for like a fucking mirror and some beads.
Well, it's not our fault. Don't leave that on us.
Hey, dude, I'm American. I was born in America.
I'm American,
man.
Everybody?
From New Jersey. What do you say there, child?
New Jersey.
She's a Jersey girl. Okay. Shit, I think we hit on everything. Are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
Oh, no, we're not. We're not done.
No?
No. I need a Dave Weiner BloggerCon update. Update.
Boing. Boing. I don't know. We're sort of closing in on it. What is today? Today is Saturday. It's a week from Saturday.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I forgot to say, today is Thursday the 28th?
Yeah, Thursday
yeah,
the 28th. Yeah, so we're sort of organizing the last event now. We're sort of up to that. We've got food has been... Oh, we've had an incredible fundraising drive. Unbelievable. We're going to end up with a surplus, basically. And
That's Dawn's iPod.
Yeah. I think if I give her an iPod, it's coming out of my bank account, not out of that.
Alrighty.
I mean, it would be fun to do that, but I don't think that's Dawn's iPod. I think that I'll use whatever we have left over to fund the next one. We'll do another BloggerCon. Maybe the next one will be in Europe, you know? I keep talking about doing one in Europe, and... Having done one, we haven't done it yet, but after this we'll have done one on the West Coast, two on the East Coast.
And besides the money that was donated, the companies that donated, I think, was really important. You know, Google and AP and people who are saying, okay, this shit's for real. These people are for real. And I saw the Google contribution as a real olive branch.
Yeah. And I sort of verified that in an email afterwards. It makes sense for Google to reach out to the bloggers and it's good that they're doing that. I mean, it's much appreciated, and they'll be great participants at the conference, and glad to have them involved. And AP, of course, is the professional journalists participating in this, and blogging is of course open to them as well. And it's like Woodstock, man. It's peace and love.
Yeah, right on.
All breaking out, you know. Hopefully, it'll be a great celebration of the new Kerry administration. On the other hand, you know, it could be that we'll be watching election returns and during the breaks, you know.
Yeah, it's very possible. Well, who knows? Who knows?
Of different courtrooms in all 50 of the American states, and perhaps there'll be a blockade by the French Navy or something like that.
Well, you know, let me tell you this. And America's a great country, and Americans are great when they get together, and they do amazing shit, and they're very spiritual together, and we can get shit together even if we don't agree. And we know when America, I think, basically, at its core, understands the fundamental what's right and what's wrong. That's been my experience. And if Bush is reelected, or if he steals the election, or whatever happens, if he is still president, you know, sometimes you have to pull an Al Capone, you know? If you can't get him for racketeering, get him on tax evasion. We'll get him.
Yeah. Well, you got to be careful about what you say there, you know?
What do you mean?
Yeah, you do. I mean,
I'm talking about legality and about if someone's breaking the law, if someone is doing us disservice.
When it was talking, you told me about the Time Europe cover, and there is open talk about civil war here.
Oh, but I don't really believe that'll happen.
You know, it's the logical consequence of a certain set of things happening. You know, it's the consequence. Kerry wins the election, and the Republicans think that there was fraud, you know, voter fraud, or they can just make that noise. Maybe they don't believe it, but they can make that noise. Or the Democrats feel, you know, that the Patriot Act 3 is coming, and it's going to include concentration camps, you know?
What?
Let's save that for another trade secrets in another day. It's too heavy to talk about at the end of one.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
and I don't want to talk about it until we know what happens in the election, right? Let's first go in. This is the moment when we still have the power to change our government. You know, that's why I said before, I see this as a referendum on America's heart. You know, do we still have that? You know, what you were talking about, this we'll do the right thing when called upon to do it. This is the moment, right? This is it. You know, our strength is that we have this thing called democracy, and it allows us to change our government without putting any troops in the street. Okay?
Our weakness is that most of the masses are hypnotized by television. That's our weakness. That is our ultimate weakness, is that our own, the best product we have in America, which is all things media, is what has us enslaved.
And this is the moment when the shit hits the fan. This is it. November 2nd, 2004. That's it.
Well, we all have a real responsibility on the web to, whatever happens, to keep reporting and keep pushing and keep, you know, keep stuff floating up to the top.
I think even more specifically, we have an obligation to really promote the idea that, you know, to promote Kerry candidacy, basically. That there is a consistent set of principles there which says that's the thing to do. That you promote the Kerry candidacy and you also hold his feet to the fire after the election. In other words, there's no big sigh of relief. We have to make sure he doesn't do to the Republicans what the Republicans have done to us. We have to make deals with the Republicans. We have to listen to them. We have to try to meet their objectives, reasonable objectives, if we win. Okay? That's very, very important. That's how we avoid a civil war.
Hold on. While you're doing your little thing there, your soliloquy, I'm going to play some Vangelis. That sounds really cool.
We need to wind this up.
Do the thing again about voting for Kerry.
Vote for Kerry.
Oh, come on. Do it like a whole sentence. It'll sound good.
Please vote for Kerry as if the life of your country depends on it.
That was beautiful.
I'm not a professional video guy like you are, you know?
No, but that's... But you know what? Both of us have the perfect face for radio.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
That was really, that was good. That was a nice chat.
Thanks, Adam. It was a pleasure, as always.
So what are we going to do tomorrow? Do we have a play date?
Tomorrow is what, Friday?
Yeah. No, I'm going flying tomorrow. That's right. Fuck it. I'm going flying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends what the weather's like here. But anyway, yeah. I actually have a lot of work to do.
Okay.
A conference up in less than... A little over a week, so...
Yeah, I hear you. Well, listen, I'm coming out Thursday.
A week from today, then, huh?
That's right. I'm really excited about it.
Me too. Excellent.
Really cool. Excited. All right, Mon, so I'm going to go sit with the women.
Very good. Talk to you later.
All right. No, that's not how we end the show.
Okay, how do we end it?
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Hey, fuck you.
Yeah, all right. Take it easy, buddy.
Right.
Bye, Dave.
It's trade secrets now. The boobiest crew's got beats for you.
That's trade secrets. You can send us your comments, Dave at scripting.com or Adam at curry.com. I'm probably going to post this on iPodder.org. It's our new home for trade secrets. See you next time, everybody.
Trade secrets. These beats blow up your speakers.
Trade secrets.
Trade secrets.